This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So I'm Barbara Haynes, for those of you who have never met me, and I was part of this most recent Jukai study group, and we studied the precepts, and it was a new experience for me. I have never talked much about practice, if at all, and I've been doing it for 47 years. So it was a good beginning. And I also want to say that It's feeling to me like I have always used the precepts when there was a big problem, just so I didn't make things worse. There wasn't anything terribly proactive about it. And I'll give you an example of that. I really spend most of my time around people who wouldn't practice Zen Buddhism if their life depended on it, which it does. And so what really I talk about is everyday things, my family, my kids, my coworkers. In my own mind, I'm talking about practice, and I'll do the best I can to make it not just a story. And also to make it about life as it is, which is not an expression I'm terribly familiar with before I came to the Zendo. I'm starting to become comfortable with it. I grew up in Southeast Pennsylvania. I was a religious kid. I come from Anabaptist traditions, where probably every kid goes to church. There's a lot of history. Every kid probably thinks they believe in God, at least when they're little. I remember sitting in Bible school once as a, probably kindergarten age, wondering. They said God was everywhere, and I was sitting there thinking, does that mean God's on my glasses? Does that mean God's on my knee? You know, I would think about things like that. And so I kind of naturally wondered about things. And I also grew up in the heart of what is now Trump country. And I talked about this a year ago at the end of Sesshin, which was right after the election. And I'm back there now. I spent most of my life not living there, but I'm back there. Mm-hmm. I have a very beautiful place out in the country. All my neighbors are, wow, very conservative. The guys who delivered coal on Tuesday told me that it was the Democrats who got that, put that guy up to shooting people in Las Vegas. The Democrats, in order to get gun control passed. This is the kind of thinking I live around. And so my practice has a lot to do with what do you do when somebody says that to you. That's the type of thing I deal with. I also do therapy in a community mental health center. One of my clients thought Hitler was a great leader and is a member of one of these Aryan nation, So the people that I'm around are very different from me, mostly. And I think it's my home, though. It's quite a challenge. So one of the the things that's been a big theme in my life is this community that's my home is, I'm looking here, the caught in a self-centered dream. That's us. We do that really well. So what I did, we had to get a picture out of our parents, and it's in there on the altar. And I was in a big rush, and the one I picked, only one I found, was this. It was perfect. Both my parents were tan. They were grinning from ear to ear. They looked like life was just a bowl of cherries. And that's what you do. You try and just have life be that way. And if you're successful with that and you have a lot of money as well, that's even better. And so when I found that picture, I'm going to pass this around. You can look at it if you want to, or not. You can just pass it on. Right behind that picture was this picture of more of that life. Everybody in this picture is white and Protestant. My parents are over on the right. My dad has a W for Westchester State, and my mom's right to his right. And this was the camp they ran in Pocono Manor. And everybody has money, and everybody's, I don't know, the kids don't look all that happy. But this world is unfortunately flourishing at the moment, and I live in it. So there's a tremendous danger for me of getting drawn into a group identity with something like that for a whole lot of reasons, which I won't go into here. It's a big part of my life. I was with two other major Zendos in the United States, and I left them for that reason, because the group identity was just way out of whack in both cases for very different reasons. I came here, and the first time I came here, I thought, those people don't do Zazen enough. That was my first thought. Because the schedule was nice. It sounded like 4:30 in the morning till 9 at night, mostly sitting. This was like there were all these breaks and unstructured sitting. But I kept coming back, and I realized that the group dynamic was not way out of whack. And when I talked to Barry, he would actually listen to what I said, and he would really get it. And then he would say something very useful. And I thought, oh. as opposed to what had happened before, which is, how totally zonked out are you on samadhi at the moment, you know, so that I can tell you you're a great Zen student. That was what had happened at the prior Zendos. So anyway, I was a religious kid, and things were going on pretty well. My mom was kind of a hot-headed, but she was pretty and taught school and took care of things, and my dad was doing okay. And then one night, I found myself standing in the backyard in the dark, about the age of 9. And I can still be there, saying to myself, she might die, because she had been diagnosed with cancer for the second or third time by this time. And all the happy, grinny, suntanned stuff went away almost immediately. The doctor she went to gave her any kind of pill she asked for. And the pharmacist, she had 5 or 6 different pharmacists. Rather than really ever say anything to oneself about dying, it was always, we're not going to think about that. So after a couple years of trying to fix that for the family, I basically went into like withdrawal and went down the back alley to go to church and sing in the choir with one of my friends. And I actually turned to the Presbyterian faith, and it was what got me through it. I took it seriously. I kept myself in pretty much in a state of faith. I even used to read a chapter of the Bible every night, the Old Testament for some reason. Had no idea what it meant, but there was something about the practicing, something like that, that kept me from joining in with the family chaos. And then I went away to college and became an atheist and did a lot of things, primarily with like race issues. Went to an all-black school in the South and had no idea what I believed. Worked very hard because I was totally unprepared for this Ivy League school I had gotten into. Like, it was just slogging, thinking, trying to write papers. Got out of there, and my head was just non-stop. It was just racing thoughts. Couldn't sleep. Got married right away because I didn't want to be without a plan. Had never liked the guy I married particularly. So that went really well. And he was into Zen, and I said, oh, please. He had studied it in college, kind of in his literature courses. So I tagged along with him to some of the things he did, and I also read some of his books, and I read Kapla's book. We went hitchhiking around Europe after we got married that summer, right out of college, and then we were all set up to go teach English in Colombia through some program I had found, so we could travel some more. And I said to him, no, we have to go back and go to the Zen Center. Well, that was just like, but he did it. And we went to that center in February after the year we graduated. And I had been sitting on my own, kind of just sitting there, like having very little idea how to do that at all, just sitting. Got into that Zendo, I told the Jukai group this. All of a sudden, there was something I could turn to deal with this mental agitation. I couldn't have said anything about it. It was just instantly sitting in that Zendo. I said, wow. And so we stayed there. I wanted to stay. He did not. He did not particularly like it. He was the one who had wanted to pursue Zen originally, but I just threw myself into it, went to Vada Sashin, was on a part-time staff program for a while, for a couple years. Sat in the Zendo one evening and just wow, again. Only this time it was not anything I would have expected. It was just, oh, I have never seen things the way they really are. It was just so dramatic. And I'm not separate at all, period. And there's no real separate anything. And so I went to talk to the teacher, and he wouldn't talk to me. He threw me out. So that went on for a little while, and I was pretty mad about that. And then I became pregnant, and we left town. And during this time, that center was just in massive chaos. The social dynamics and the organization, oh my gosh. So when we left and came back to our home area in Southeast Pennsylvania, I started going to Quaker meeting. My father's from a Quaker background, and I wanted a group that sat quietly and they sit for an hour. And for a couple years, I just was so resentful because all they did was sit for an hour and they weren't Zen Buddhists. And then I started to realize they had some practices about running the group that were really useful. And I started to be able in 1 hour to do some really serious sitting, because that's all I really had. And I continue to do both to this day. I do both Quaker practice and Zen practice. During all that time, I was practicing on my own, pretty much, because I had little kids and I couldn't go to many sesshin. And there were times down in the country, I own the property, I still am now, when I could get into one of these states that's so wonderful. But most of the time, I would just remember being like that and wish that I could be like that all the time. And I tried my best to practice. And then my husband left. And so there I was with these three little kids. So I had to go somewhere because he and his family were going to take custody of my kids. So guess where I went? Up to the Rochester Zen Center. By that time, it had completely collapsed. Tony Packer had left, so there weren't hardly any members. The young guy my age was a teacher, and he had just started the year I arrived. And so I thought, oh, well, maybe we could work out something different here at this center. He wanted nothing to do with anything different, really. And so after a couple years, I was going to a lot of sesshin and a lot of part-time sesshin during that period. And it was really wonderful to sit that much with a group. Oh, it was so wonderful. But then I just couldn't do it anymore because it was like I had all the families coming in on a Sunday morning and the kids would come and we'd have different groups and the adults would be in the Zendo. And for once, the place had people in it and he would be sending out letters saying, this is not Zen. So eventually, after a couple years, I started going to Quaker meeting, and I had very little to do with that center. That was in 91. Because they were really rah-rah training young teachers and all that sort of stuff. And so eventually, after my kids grew up, I had the time, and I found another Zendo out of the Aiken Roshi lineage. And I spent a lot of time going out there. I went to a lot of sesshin. And they taught me this wonderful thing. Nelson Foster was my teacher. And that was how to not always wish that I was stoked up in a retreat, that I could have a practice on a daily basis. And so I'm incredibly grateful for that. And I love feeling like whatever is my daily life, I can feel connected with, and there I stop, I don't know what to call it. I don't talk about it. So, and then I had to leave there because the teacher, like, he'd been teaching for 30 years and he had never named even an assistant. So that was clearly going to be another, like, you know, focus on great teachers. And I started looking and I came here right away in another place and then I ended up coming back here. I have a little group down there in southeast Pennsylvania in Kennett Square. And I continue to practice. I consider all day my practice. And I feel so fortunate. Now, when it comes to the precepts, how am I doing with time here? Do I have?
You're all right.
What, 5 minutes, 10 minutes?
Two?
So much.
Take five, we'll shave it off. Okay.
Okay, see, I told you I can't talk about the Dharma. The precept that we just came out, I got emailed these copies of some articles. I guess Claire had put them together. And this was the seventh precept on. See? Hold on. It's on not praising yourself and blaming others. Not praising self at the expense of others. And really, I can say it very quickly, I was just blown away by what was said in these articles. Because I had always just kind of toughed it out in a situation where somebody was really giving me a hard time. I would just, like I say, try not to make it worse. I wouldn't get aggressive, I would. But the gist of these articles, and I would suggest everybody get a copy from Chris or Claire, is that that's not enough. That we have to stay in relationship with people who are giving us a hard time, even though we are so angry that we don't care if we ever see them again. We have to stay in relationship with them, and through that relationship, then we can communicate and work things out. The examples that were in the articles, one was from an article by Aiken Roshi that says, like there was a family and the mother and the daughter, there was a lot of arguing, the mother and the daughter used to role play. And the daughter would play the mother and the mother would play the daughter, even though they were mad at each other. And then they would start laughing, you know, that kind of thing. So really just stick with it. The other example he gave was of two teachers who were at odds, really in a very sort of elegant Zen back and forth dialogue. And the gist of it was that they ended up being very gracious and respectful to each other while they disagreed. And they didn't disparage each other. And they, by doing that, they realized the precept of not praising oneself at the expense of others. They loved each other, so they kept it respectful. And the only other thing I'll say is, even though I can't talk about the Dharma, I love the things that Dogen says. Actually, they make sense to me. People will say, did you see that? You know, like, so there was one in one of the articles where Aiken had said, how do you put on clothing when there's no inside or no outside? What remains when there is not even a bit of earth on the ground? He said that in response to a comment, a passage from Dogen Zenji. Buddha's ancestral teachers realized the empty sky and the great earth. When they manifest the noble body, there is neither inside nor outside in emptiness. When they manifest the Dharma body, there is not even a bit of earth on the ground.